I intend to survive. These words end the first episode of The Handmaid's Tale, based on the novel by Margaret Atwood. The woman who speaks these words, Offred, has lost her daughter, her husband, her freedom, and even her name, as she is living in the not-so-distant future, where environmental conditions have resulted in the infertility of most women. American democracy has shifted into a strict religious rule that gives men complete control over women and their bodies. The very few women who remain able to have children become fertility slaves to breed human children for wealthy families to raise and call their own. Offred, the narrator, doesn't keep her own name, but is instead named for her commander, so she is of Fred. I intend to survive. The most important ways that Offred fights for her survival are inside of her, as she finds hope in the midst of horror and reserves some part of herself for resisting the face of repression. She finds her spiritual well that will sustain her in the wilderness of her new reality. I intend to survive. Perhaps Hagar, the Egyptian slave, also uttered these words when Abraham and Sarah made her into a fertility slave to guarantee the covenant that God had promised them, to make of them a great nation. When Hagar first conceived, she looked with contempt upon Sarah. Both women were caught in a patriarchal system that valued women primarily for their ability to bear children. And in this passage we heard read today, Sarah was not laughing like we heard in the reading from last week. This bitter Sarah dealt harshly with Hagar, and Hagar ran into the wilderness. The first time in the wilderness, God presented her with a spring and promised her that God would make a nation through her and her son, who would be called Ishmael. Hagar then named the voice of God, El Roy, which means the God who sees. Hagar, you may not know, is the first person in the Bible to give God a name. Hagar returns to Sarah and Abraham only to face Sarah's punishment and Abraham's dismissal once more, when Sarah finally bears a son and cannot stand to see her child play with the boy Ishmael. At that point, left in the wilderness with only one skin of water, one piece of bread, survival becomes a dimmer possibility. After the water emptied and the hot desert sun beat upon Hagar and her boy, can you imagine? Alone in the wilderness, dying of thirst with your only child, who is even weaker than you? Knowing her child was dying and that she couldn't do anything about it, Hagar wept. Do not look. Do not let me look on the death of my child. Maybe her lips formed a prayer like that of the psalmist. Don't just be the God who sees, but also the God who hears. Incline your ear to me, O Lord, and answer me, for I am poor and needy. Preserve my life and that of my sons, for I am devoted to you. Save your servant who trusts in you. You are my God. At that moment of deepest desperation, God provided a well of water and told Hagar, lift up the boy and hold him fast with your hand, for I will make a great nation of him. And so, Hagar lived to see her son become an adult, an expert with the bow, to marry and trust in a future that they would both live to see. Hagar's survival had to include her son in it. When she was banished by Abraham and Sarah, she could have left Ishmael behind while she pursued her own freedom. Would have been easier without a child to take care of. Many mothers and fathers have been in this position where her own future was tied to his well-being. My friends who have black sons tell me about the talk they give their boys. If you ever get pulled over by the police, here's the respect you must show in order to survive. It doesn't matter if you've done nothing wrong. It doesn't matter if your rights have been violated. To stay alive, you say yes, sir, to everything the officer says, so that you will live. But yes, sir does not always protect a life. As we saw in the video clips of Philando Castile's killing made public last week, watching the videos brought forth Hagar's grief and caused many to ask, where is Elroy? Where is the God who sees? There's not much a loving mother or father won't do to secure the safety and future of their child. Last spring, love was in the air. But in one park in Shanghai, some moms thought that love might need a little help. In People's Park, it is a custom that mothers who are desperate for their children to find a spouse promenade with posters advertising their marriageable children's picture, height, age, job, income, and education level to get their late bloomers a little boost in the romance department. This year, a group of mothers of gay sons marched with pictures of their sons, calling out, I'm here to find a boyfriend for my son. They were met with harassment and were eventually forced out of the park. But their persistence on behalf of their sons did not go unappreciated. As one Chinese gay rights advocate said, gay men deserve the right to be just as embarrassed by their mothers' obnoxious matchmaking efforts as straight men and women are. As we know in God's appearance to Hagar, and can see in Jesus stepping across tradition's line over and over to welcome women, to welcome the poor, to welcome the disabled, to welcome the unclean, God has a special care for the outcasts and a desire not only for their survival, but that they may also drink from the waters of life. Consider the possibility that the well of water was right beside Hagar and Ishmael all along. But because Hagar's eyes were so full of her tears, she could not see it. Perhaps her eyes were so stuck on her boy, watching for signs of life departing him, that she could not see the dancing of sun on top of the waters. Perhaps it took the God who sees to point Hagar to the flowing stream that would preserve their lives before she could actually open her eyes to it. I know that I sometimes get so weighed down by the terrible things happening in the world that I can sometimes miss the wellsprings of water God has placed right in front of me. As much as I believe that a committed Christian should care about the daily news and be knowledgeable, educating herself or himself about the issues of the day, I find that sometimes there's no rest in the news alerts that flash across my iPhone. And I acknowledge that I have a tendency when I'm bored to not just sit around and be bored and see where my bored brain might take me into some places of creative imagination and innovation. Instead, I don't let myself be bored. I go to my phone and I devour the news. That's my go-to thing. And I scroll through the headlines several times a day. Reading them so often makes me quite sure that the apocalypse is about to happen and we better move to Canada while we still have a chance. This kind of anxiety is actually paralyzing, and instead of keeping me engaged in the world in a way that that might help to change it, it makes me fearful. It makes me feel helpless in it. And so I made a decision last week to stay off the news pages. I still allow myself to read my daily email from the New York Times and follow what articles might be in it. But I stopped there. In just a week, I've seen a difference in my ability to connect with my family, and I'm able to focus my energies on areas where I feel I can actually make a difference rather than worry about things that I can't change. I'm not saying that we should close our eyes to the troubles around the world. We have to look. We have to see them. But we also have to keep our eyes open to where God points out wells all around us. God longs to give us something to drink so that we don't get tired, so that we don't get thirsty doing the important work God has in store for us. Through Hagar and Ishmael, God made a nation, the Bible said. Had Hagar not seen or heard what God was showing her, she and Ishmael never would have survived in the wilderness. I'll be marching with my family today in New York City's Pride Parade. In a New York Times article, which I'm allowed to read this weekend, there's a headline, "Gay Pride's Choice, March in Protest or Dance Worries Away." The Pride March began to commemorate the Stonewall riots that were protests in the raiding of the Stonewall Inn in Greenwich Village 48 years ago. But along with protests comes rainbows and glitter and everything fabulous. We have fun, and for a day at least, we feel like the whole city affirms our sacred worth. Our love is valued, our families are valued, our health is valued. People come from all over the world to cheer us on or march in their own cities. We drink from the well of all that joy and affirmation so that we can make it through another year of families and churches shutting the doors in our faces, politicians who won't let us use a bathroom of our choice, and schoolyard bullies that make kids question whether they deserve to live. Some years, we do even more than just survive off of that year of pride. We actually become agents of change and transformation with real progress that we can see, shedding light on those deep wells of water God puts all around us, and reminding the world that God invites us to drink too. Here at church, we try to be a well for any thirsty person who comes from the wilderness through our doors and needs a drink. Sometimes we will be the ones in need of a drink. And sometimes we will be the ones able to offer a drink to somebody else. But we cannot do this without tapping in to God as a true living source of our water. May our wells never run dry. Amen.